Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are tackling something pretty profound, I think. We're diving into Fritjof Capra's The Tao of Physics, a really landmark book from 1975.
Yeah, landmark is right. It basically threw down this gauntlet, claiming that ancient Eastern wisdom, it actually holds keys to understanding modern science, quantum physics even.
Which sounds, well, almost impossible on the surface, doesn't it?
It really does, because, you know, for centuries, Western thought built this huge wall. Science over here, objective, analytical matter, spirituality over there, subjective, intuitive consciousness.
And Capra just comes along and says, nope, look closer.
Pretty much. He argues that the really cutting-edge stuff in physics, relativity, quantum mechanics, they don't conflict with Eastern mysticism. They actually converge with it. Think Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism.
Okay, let's unpack that, because the implications are huge. If he's right, that whole split between knowing things rationally and, I guess, knowing things spiritually, maybe it's just, well, artificial.
That's exactly his point. He wanted to heal what he called the fractured modern consciousness, this feeling that mind and matter are separate, that analysis always trumps intuition. Mm. By showing this convergence, he's offering a way to put things back together, a more holistic view, which honestly feels pretty necessary for the 21st century, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, so who is this guy, Fritjof Capra?
Yeah.
The one making these connections.
Right, so he's an Austrian-born American physicist. And this is crucial. He's got serious scientific chops.
Like proper credentials.
Definitely.
Yeah.
A PhD in theoretical physics from the University of Vienna. He did high-level research at places like the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory. He's not just some philosopher thinking about physics. He was doing physics.
That makes a difference. He's coming from inside the scientific world.
Exactly. He speaks both languages, you could say, science and, well, something deeper. And the whole idea for the book didn't actually come from equations or labs.
No, where then?
It came from this personal epiphany he had back in 1969, apparently. He was sitting on a beach.
The classic setting for an epiphany.
Right. He was thinking about his research, particle collisions, subatomic stuff, and he had this vivid image. Particles constantly being created, destroyed in this incredibly fast rhythmic dance.
Wow.
And boom, he instantly saw it, the scientific picture of energy flow. He recognized it as the cosmic dance of Shiva, the Hindu god who creates and destroys.
That's quite a connection to make from particle physics to Hindu cosmology.
Isn't it? That single aha moment connected his analytical work with thousands of years of Eastern insight. That's what sparked the whole book.
So the Tao of Physics, what's the book actually trying to do? What's its core mission?
Okay, so it's basically got two main jobs. Mm-hmm. First, show how 20th century physics just completely blew up the old way of seeing the universe.
The old way being like Newton's clockwork universe.
Exactly. That classical view. Universe is a giant machine. Predictable, static, made of separate little solid bits. Objective reality, totally detached from us.
And modern physics said?
Modern physics said, not so fast. It replaced that machine idea with something much more, well, alive, organic, dynamic, holistic, everything interconnected. Reality isn't about solid parts anymore. It's about this web of relationships, probabilities, energy flowing.
That sounds much more like the Eastern ideas already.
Precisely. So the book's structure guides you through this. Capra starts with the old view, Cartesian dualism, mind separate from matter. Then he walks you through the big physics revolutions, relativity, quantum theory.
Making the science accessible.
Yeah, he explains it really clearly. Then he shifts gears and gives an overview of Eastern philosophy's key ideas like Brahman in Hinduism, impermanence in Buddhism, the Tao in Taoism.
And finally brings it all together.
Right. The last part is the synthesis. He lays out the parallels point by point. It's ambitious. He's basically proposing a whole new way of thinking, ecological, integrated, using both reason and intuition.
Okay, let's dig into the physics side first. How did it start to break down that old machine view? What was the crisis?
Well, the crisis Capra identifies is rooted in that Newtonian picture. Universe made of separate objects. Everything happening in absolute space and absolute time, like fixed stages.
Okay.
This fragmented view, treating everything as disconnected, he argues, is kind of the philosophical source of a lot of our modern problems, ecological crises, social fragmentation.
Because we see ourselves as separate from nature, separate from each other.
Exactly. And the first big crack in that foundation came from Einstein. Relativity.
Right. E is E2 do and all that. But more fundamentally.
More fundamentally, Einstein got rid of the absolute. Space isn't just an empty box, and time isn't just a clock ticking uniformly everywhere. They're linked.
The space-time continuum.
Yes. A single, dynamic, four-dimensional fabric. Space and time are relative. They depend on the observer, on motion, on gravity. They're part of the cosmic dance, not just the stage.
And EMC $2 on the equation.
It's profound. It tells us mass isn't some solid fundamental stuff. It's just incredibly concentrated energy. Matter and energy are interchangeable. The universe isn't static things. It's flowing energy taking different forms.
So relativity shook up space, time, and matter. Then came the quantum revolution.
And if relativity shook things up, quantum mechanics just turned the table over. The world of the very small, the subatomic.
Yeah.
It's just deeply weird.
We help.
Well, for starters, reality down there isn't made of things in the way we usually imagine. It's more like patterns, probabilities, relationships.
Okay, give me an example.
Take wave-particle duality. An electron or a photon of light. Sometimes it acts like a tiny, localized particle, like a billiard ball. Other times, it acts like a spread-out wave.
We can be both.
It depends on how you look at it, how you measure it. Which just shatters the idea of some fundamental, independent building block with fixed properties. Its properties depend on the context, on the observation.
Whoa. So the observer isn't separate.
That's the mind-bending part. Quantum mechanics show the observer is fundamentally involved. The act of measuring changes the system. You literally can't talk about nature without also talking about how you are observing it.
So consciousness, or at least observation, is linked to reality itself.
It seems inescapable in the quantum world, which for traditional Western science was radical, almost heresy, this idea that we're participants, not just spectators.
That really does change everything.
Yeah.
And there's more weirdness, right? Entanglement.
Oh yeah, quantum entanglement. It sounds like sci-fi, but it's real. Two particles interact, and then even if they fly apart across vast distances, they stay connected, mysteriously linked.
Linked how?
If you measure a property of one particle, you instantly know the corresponding property of the other one, no matter how far away it is. It's like there's still one system. It points to this deep, non-local interconnectedness across the universe.
Okay, my brain hurts a little. It's so counterintuitive.
It absolutely is, which makes it even more amazing that ancient mystics, without any of this equipment or math, seem to arrive at similar conclusions about reality.
Right. How do they do that? Through looking inward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Deep introspection, meditation, contemplation. Let's shift to that view from within, as Kepler calls it.
Okay. Starting with Hinduism.
In Hinduism, you have this concept of Brahman, the ultimate reality. It's not a personal god, but this single, unifying, all-pervading, divine ground of being. Everything emerges from Brahman and returns to it.
And the world we see?
That's considered Maya. Often translated as illusion, but it's more nuanced. It's the illusion of separateness, the appearance of distinct things and individual selves when ultimately everything is interconnected in Brahman.
And Shiva's dance fits in here. The beach epiphany.
Perfectly. Shiva Nataraja, the cosmic dancer. That image represents the ceaseless, dynamic cycle of creation and destruction that is the universe. It's not static. It's constant rhythmic change, just like Kepler saw in the particle interactions.
Okay, moving on to Buddhism. What are the core ideas there?
Buddhism really emphasizes impermanence, Annika. Everything is in flux. Nothing stays the same. Change is the only constant.
That sounds relatable.
It is, and flowing from that is dependent origination, Patika Samuppada. It means nothing exists on its own independently. Everything arises in relationship to everything else. A causes B, B causes C. It's all interconnected conditions.
No separate inherent existence.
Exactly. Which leads to sunyata, usually translated as emptiness or the void.
Which sounds empty, like nothingness.
That's a common misunderstanding. It doesn't mean literal nothingness. It means things are empty of intrinsic, separate, unchanging self-existence. They're full of potential, yes, but they exist dependently, relatively, dynamically.
Okay, that's a subtle but important distinction.
Yeah.
And Taoism.
Taoism talks about the Tao, the way, the ultimate, unnameable, underlying cosmic principle or flow of the universe. You can't really define it, but you can live in harmony with it.
How does it show up in the world?
Through the interplay of yin and yang. These two complementary opposite forces. Yin is like the passive, dark, receptive, feminine principle. Yang is the active, light, assertive, masculine principle.
But they're not in conflict.
No, they're two sides of the same coin. They arise together, flow into each other, think night and day, stillness and movement. Reality is this constant dance, this dynamic balance between them.
Okay, physics, Eastern wisdom. Now for the synthesis, weaving it together. This is Kappa's big move.
This is where it gets really compelling. Let's look at the parallels. That quantum idea of the universe as an indivisible web where everything's connected through entanglement.
Yeah.
How closely does that mirror the Hindu concept of Brahman, the underlying unity, or the Buddhist idea of dependent origination, where nothing exists in isolation? Both science and mysticism seem to say separateness is an illusion.
Hmm. Okay. That's a strong parallel. What else?
Think about complementarity. In physics, you have wave-particle duality. Hmm. An electron is both, depending on how you look.
Right, the contradictory aspects that are both true.
Now compare that to the Taoist yin and yang. Opposites, yes, but complementary poles of a single reality. You can't have one without the other. Both physics and Taoism seem to say that reality embraces opposites.
That's interesting. It's a structural similarity in how they describe things, but is it just an analogy? Is Capra just finding poetic similarities, or is it deeper?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And Capra argues it's deeper than just analogy. He'd say both systems, using vastly different methods, are forced to similar conclusions about reality's fundamental nature because that's how reality is.
Okay, I see the argument. It's not just metaphor. It's convergence on the same underlying truths.
Right, like the dynamic nature of the universe. Physics shows us subatomic particles constantly popping in and out of existence, the ceaseless shimmer of energy.
Shiva's dance again.
Exactly. It's a scientifically observed phenomenon that perfectly matches this ancient Hindu metaphor for cosmic becoming. Both describe a universe that is fundamentally process, not stuff.
And the quantum vacuum, that idea that empty space isn't really empty.
Yes. It's not void. It's this incredibly dynamic field, teeming with potential energy, virtual particles constantly flickering.
How does that connect?
It resonates powerfully with the Buddhist concept of sunyata, emptiness. Not nothingness, remember, but the potential-filled void from which all forms arise and into which they dissolve. There's that famous line from the Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness is form.
Wow. Physics and ancient sutras saying similar things. That is pretty striking.
It really is. One of the most compelling connections he makes.
Okay, so stepping back, what are the big messages we should take away from all this? Let's maybe pull out three key themes.
Sounds good. Theme one has to be the fundamental unity of all things.
Right. Everything is connected. Physics says it, mystics say it.
And the reflection for us, if you really internalize that, that feeling of being an isolated individual, maybe it softens. You start to feel part of this larger cosmic web. It could genuinely reduce feelings of loneliness, maybe even existential anxiety.
Yeah.
You belong to the universe.
Hey, that's powerful. Theme two.
Reality as a dynamic, ever-changing process.
The constant flux.
Yeah.
Impermanence.
Yeah. And if the universe is constant change, then trying to cling rigidly to things, situations, ideas, even our sense of self is bound to cause suffering.
Right, like swimming against the current.
Exactly. So this insight encourages more mental flexibility, accepting the flow, being adaptable, less attachment, maybe more peace. It lines up so well with Buddhist teachings.
Makes sense. And a third theme.
How about the complementarity of opposites?
Moving beyond either or thinking.
Yes. Physics needed wave and particle. Taoism needs yin and yang. It challenges us to stop seeing things in such black and white terms, in our own lives too.
Like logic versus intuition.
Perfect example. We often privilege analytical thinking, but this perspective suggests we need both rational analysis and intuitive insight. There are complementary paths to understanding. We need the whole picture.
It really pushes for integration, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's interesting how both physicists trying to describe the quantum world and mystics trying to describe ultimate reality often end up using metaphors, poetry.
Because normal language just can't capture it. It's built for a world of separate objects.
Precisely. Ordinary language breaks down. Capra himself quotes physicists and mystics who say exactly that.
Are there any specific quotes from the book that really stand out that capture these ideas?
Yeah, there are a few great ones. One really nails the main thesis. The basic oneness of the universe is not only the central characteristic of the mystical experience, but is also one of the most important revelations of modern physics.
Straight to the point.
A convergence.
Exactly.
And then there's the one about the observer, which is so crucial. In atomic physics, we can never speak about nature without, at the same time, speaking about ourselves.
Underscoring that link between consciousness and reality. No pure objectivity.
Right. The knower and the known are tangled together. And related to that, there's a kind of warning about language and concepts. Capra says something like, concepts are creations of the mind, parts of the map, not of the territory.
The classic map is not the territory idea. We shouldn't mistake our models of reality for reality itself.
Yeah, both science and spirituality need to be careful not to get stuck in their own conceptual boxes. The ultimate reality might transcend all our descriptions.
So, bringing this down to earth a bit, how can we actually apply these big ideas, unity, flux, complementarity? What does it mean for everyday life or, say, bigger issues like ecology?
Well, the interconnectedness idea has huge implications for systems thinking in ecology.
How so?
If everything is truly connected in one web, then harming the environment isn't just some external problem. You're literally damaging the larger system you are part of. It provides a really deep philosophical basis for environmental responsibility, for stewardship.
It moves it beyond just practical necessity to a kind of ethical imperative based on reality itself.
I think so. And you see this filtering into business, too, moving away from just optimizing one part, like short-term profit, towards looking at the whole systems, supply chains, employee well-being, environmental impact. Because if the whole system isn't healthy, that profit won't last. It's about resilience built on understanding the connections.
Okay, that makes sense. What about on a more personal level?
The idea that consciousness is involved in shaping reality that connects directly to practices like mindfulness or meditation.
Oh.
By observing your thoughts and feelings without rigid attachment, you realize they're also part of that flux. Your sense of self becomes more fluid, less fixed. It can build resilience because you're not so desperately clinging to one specific version of me. You become more adaptable.
Less brittle, maybe? More able to roll with the punches.
Yeah, exactly. And think about conflict and division. If the fundamental reality is unity,
then tribalism, nationalism, us versus them.
Yeah.
It all looks kind of misguided, based on an illusion of separation.
Precisely. This unified worldview fundamentally undermines the basis for that kind of thinking. It provides a strong intellectual and, you could say, spiritual foundation for global empathy. If we're all waves in the same ocean, why fight over who owns which part of the water?
That's a powerful thought. So as we wrap up this deep dive,
yeah.
What's the one thing that really struck you or maybe surprised you revisiting this book?
For me, I think it's the sheer audacity of it still, but also how validated it feels now, decades later. The way systems thinking and complexity science have become more mainstream, the growing interest in mindfulness. It all seems to echo Capra's call for integration. It wasn't just a fringe idea, it was ahead of its time.
Yeah, I agree. What surprised me, I think, is just how clear the parallels can seem when laid out like this. That stark realization that the wall we built between science and spirit, maybe it really was just in our heads, a limitation of an older way of thinking. The universe feels less like a cold machine and more like walled, something alive and interconnected, like the mystics always said.
And my final thought is maybe the encouragement it offers. We don't have to choose. We can use both our rational minds and our intuitive wisdom. Science and contemplation aren't enemies. They can be partners in helping us understand our world and ourselves more deeply.
A truly holistic approach. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.